Welcome to the Regional Roundup, a production of Rocky Mountain Community Radio, a coalition of public and community radio stations in Colorado, Wyoming, Utah, and New Mexico, including this one. I'm Maeve Conran, the coalition's managing editor, and today we'll hear about an experimental forest in the Rocky Mountain West.
There are about 77 experimental forests throughout the United States. There are 14 within the Rocky Mountain region and 2 in Colorado.
The Fight for Family Project in Utah.
If you are a same-sex couple or even a heterosexual couple, if you want to be able to adopt children as a couple, you have to get married in this state.
Colorado's new poet laureate.
I wasn't by any means natural. Was not one of those wow hounds born jaw-dropped. I was tough in the husk.
And a very special prom in Aspen.
I felt a little special for being here today.
From Rocky Mountain Community Radio, it's the Regional Roundup. The Fraser Experimental Forest was established in 1937, and it spans just over 36 miles or 23,000 acres. In north central Colorado. This outdoor research laboratory was first established to study the relationship between forest management and water. Now it also hosts research on insects and soil. KFFR's DJ Abbey spoke to Banning Starr, a research scientist with the Forest Service.
The experimental forest is part of a group of experimental forests. It's called the Experimental Forest and Range Network. There are about 77 experimental forests throughout the United States. There are 14 within the Rocky Mountain region and 2 in Colorado. So there's the Fraser Experimental Forest here in Fraser, Colorado, and then there's the Manitou Experimental Forest, which is located outside of Colorado Springs. Two very different environments, right? So Manitou is low elevation ponderosa pine forest, much warmer, less water. And then there's the experimental forest, which is located at high elevations, right, on the western slope of the Continental Divide. And what's important about that and why our main mission is to look at forest management and water yield is that in Colorado, over 85% of our water is generated in environments like the experimental forest. So in the subalpine, these high elevation mountainous region, that equates to about 20 million acre feet of water.
What's an acre foot of water?
It's an acre, which is an area of water 1 foot deep, basically.
And an acre is roughly a football field.
Exactly. So it's basically a football field that's 12 inches deep.
20 million acre feet of water from high elevation alpine environments such as ours. Your experimental forest has been actually cutting trees in specific ways over these years and studying how cutting trees in certain ways impacts the water yield. When I moved here 30 years ago, I looked up on that hillside and I thought, wow, is this like an old defunct ski area? Because those look like ski runs that are cut down into, you know, through the forest. But do you do certain different types of deforestation, really?
The project that you're talking about is really interesting. It's one of the largest paired watershed studies of its kind in the world. And what I mean by paired watersheds is you have two watersheds, and in this case, it was the Fool Creek watershed and the East St. Louis Creek watershed. They're about the same shape, about the same elevation, and about the same area. And what they do is they look at different environmental parameters over time. So in this case, they look at like snow accumulation and runoff in those two watersheds, and they create a relationship. So on large snow years, they both have a lot of snow and they both have more runoff. Well, over time, you know, you get a really strong relationship between those two basins. Then you apply a treatment to one of the basins. So the area you're talking about that looked like the old ski runs is Fool Creek. And that was the treatment basin where they came in and they took 40% of the merchantable timber or 50% of what's called basal area out of that watershed to look at the responses to snow accumulation and runoff. You know, trees are little straws. They use water. So by cutting those trees down, more of that water makes it to the stream. But also trees are really good at sublimating snow. You know, when you're cross-country skiing through the experimental forest and it's beautiful and you see these big pillows of snow on the pine trees, that snow is actually sublimating. It's turning from a solid to a gas and blowing away.
So my brain would have told me that cutting down trees is bad. It makes more sun hit the snow, which would make the snow melt more quickly. But like you said, trees are little straws. They're thirsty suckers. So by doing these forestry experiments, you're saying which holds the snow longer, better, higher, removing trees or keeping trees there?
So in that Fool Creek experiment, what they found, you know, the different shaped cuts were only to look at how those different shapes or larger areas would affect that snow accumulation. But what they found there is by removing the trees in those shapes, they found about a 40% increase in snow accumulation and about that same amount of an increase in runoff. That doesn't go to say that we want to run around Colorado clear-cutting all of our watersheds to increase water yield. But there's a way to do that on an individual tree basis called selective thinning or selective cutting, where we could go into a drainage basin, do some logging, and see those impacts in increased flow later in the year. Now, that Fool Creek study, we saw those increases up to 30 years past the time of harvest. And we're about to work on a 50-year analysis. The problem is a large unknown came into our study site that we had no control over, and it kind of ended that study. And that unknown was the Colorado mountain pine beetle. So when the mountain pine beetle came in, right, we were in maybe the third and fourth year of a pretty extreme drought. The mature trees were extremely stressed out, and they didn't have the ability to fight off or ward off the beetles. The younger trees were more resilient, and they were actually able to fight those beetles off. And the beetles actually prefer the mature trees over the younger trees. So those trees lived. It wasn't until later into the outbreak that we noticed that the beetles, because they are eating themselves out of house and home, they were killing all the mature trees, started to move to some of the smaller trees.
That was Banning Starr, a research scientist with the Forest Service, speaking with KFFR's DJ Abbey about the Fraser Experimental Forest. And you can find the entire interview at kffr.org. Former Salt Lake City Mayor and Utah State Lawmaker Jackie Biskupski and attorney Laura Gray formed the Fight for Family Project to fight for the rights of queer couples to create families. There's now a documentary about the project, and they spoke with KRCL's Laura Jones and Nick Burns on the show Radioactive.
Fight for Family Project, it's a documentary in progress.
Right.
Involving
the sort of history and the present day problems that, you know, gay and lesbian parents have. That just seems like, shouldn't moms and dads get to decide who's a family? But yet there are other people who want to make that decision for them.
Yeah, and so they've got a trailer, and we're going to play a clip of that here, featuring Kate Kendall, right?
Yeah, Kate Kendall is the first voice we hear.
Former executive director of the National Center for Lesbian Rights.
And from Utah.
Should a child have a permanent home and be adopted by a loving couple, or should they not? That should be an easy call. But when you add sexual orientation, honoring the best interest of a child is sublimated to one's own bigotry. That's what we fought against and what queer people continue to fight against in this country.
I never really wanted to have my own kids, but, you know, I would die for these families that I represented. We just wanted to provide the security for those kids that the kids of straight couples were getting automatically.
All these people started coming to me needing help, this whole community. Once Jackie got elected, we were really ramping up doing these second parent adoptions. After we did a bunch of them, the forces of evil, as I call them, found out.
That's Laura Gray.
The Fight for Family is the film. Laura Gray, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Nick. It's great to be here.
Folks will know you from Church and State. That's a film you did not so very long ago, right?
Well, that was a film about the movement that ended when we had gay marriage in Utah.
Right.
Our story starts prior to that.
Right, this particular movie. And this is JL Productions, so the L being you. And the J being Jackie Biskupski. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
Oh, my pleasure to have you both here. So why now? Why is this back around and we need it again? It seems like haven't we been doing this for decades?
In a perfect world, we wouldn't still be needing to address these issues. It seems like there's been a major backlash. We know recently and over the last few years attacking LGBTQ people and families. And anything that doesn't sort of fit the bill of a traditional family.
Yeah, and I will also add to that there are a lot of films about our history, but it does not include, they do not include all the work that was being done to help us create families.
Good point. The history of the movement is sort of Stonewall on, or sailors ending up in San Francisco after World War II, but where you go with this movie is a little bit different, looking at, you know, moms and dads. I noticed for the website, for folks who are interested, thefightforfamily.com, you've got little pictures of all the families that are featured in this movie, and it is so cute, these folks. It is so normal, and yet there's this fight, and it just seems like, I wonder, is that disheartening, Jackie? You're someone who's Mayor of Salt Lake City, in the legislature for many years. In fact, we have a clip from your speech when Utah banned adoptions even from families who were gay. Mm-hmm. And I want to play that here in a minute. But I just, it's kind of sad. 25 years later, it's a story that still needs to be told. And like you said, hasn't really been told.
Yes, and that legislation that passed in 2000 is still in place today. So if you are an unmarried couple, you cannot adopt in the state of Utah. So that
really
could be,
I didn't know it was still on the books.
Yes,
thank you.
Absolutely.
Wow.
So if you are a same-sex couple or even a heterosexual couple, if you want to be able to adopt children as a couple, you have to get married in the state.
Interesting. Huh. Should we play that clip from your speech? It's from the year 2000 when this was up for a vote.
Our actions today should be about protecting the rights of parents, and we should make certain we are providing the same legal and civil rights for everyone.
Utah House of Representatives Jackie Biskupski in 2000, Nick Burns, and you know, I was talking about this earlier today. I'm curious what year, except that I can hear that this is from 2000.
The tape sounds like 2000, but the message is pretty yesterday.
It's pretty today. It was pretty the 45-day session of the Utah legislature.
So, JL Productions, how did the two of you come together to make this movie?
Well, Jackie and I started doing activism together in the 1990s when she first became a member of the Utah House of Representatives, the first lesbian member. And I was a young attorney with my own law practice and started to represent tons of people in the LGBTQ community here in Utah, including lots of couples, mainly lesbian couples, who were forming families. And so right about the time I was working and had boots on the ground, Jackie was at the Capitol. And so it was, we sort of tag teamed and we're working together just in different arenas. And
pre-marriage equality. I think that's one of the things that it's hard to think about as we sit here in 2024, what the environment was like then. And that's what you're describing. So your clients wanted legal protections for the families they were creating.
Exactly. And at that time in the mid-1990s, people in Utah and the powers that be in Utah didn't really know that very many people that were lesbian or gay existed, much less that they would have the audacity to try to form families and seek protections for those families.
The closet was firmly closed at that point.
Yeah, we were really trying to raise the flag and say, come out, come out. And in fact, Kate Kendall, who you heard on the clip, is one of those people who was on the national stage at that time, just trying to get people to come out of the closet and be their authentic selves so that the movement toward equality would happen quicker. And yes, it was painful and people were ripping the bandage off and, you know, losing friends and families and jobs and housing through all of that process. But she was right. The more of us that are living an authentic life, the easier it was for us to gain equality or some equal rights.
Former Salt Lake City Mayor and Utah State lawmaker Jackie Biskupski and attorney Laura Gray speaking about the Fight for Family Project with Laura Jones and Nick Burns on KRCL's Radioactive. You can find the entire show at krcl.org. You're listening to the Regional Roundup from Rocky Mountain Community Radio. I'm Maeve Conran. Colorado's latest poet laureate is Andrea Gibson, an award-winning spoken word poet who has performed all over the world. They have award-winning books of poetry and recordings of their work, and currently a documentary is being made about them. Andrea Gibson spoke with KGNU's Karen Rayforth on the show Outsources and shared one of their poems.
So this poem, this is from my book, You Better Be Lightning, and it's the first poem in the book. And I will say that there's a lot of poems throughout this book, and I wrote this before my cancer diagnosis, this whole book. But it really feels like foreshadowing in a lot of ways, because I'm writing a lot about mortality, I'm writing a lot about death, and I'm writing a lot about awe. And that wasn't the place that I was in when I was writing this book. I was, I haven't commonly written in my life where I am. I often write where I want to be and try to use the poem as a roadmap there. After my cancer diagnosis, this poem I'm about to share really, really resonates with me. But there were ways that it was an aspiring poem at the time. I got the prompt for this from my partner, Megan Falley. She said, write an acceptance speech for a fictional award. And I wrote acceptance speech after setting the world record in Goosebumps. I wasn't by any means natural. Was not one of those wow hounds born jaw dropped. I was tough in the husk, went years untouched by rain, took shelter seriously, even and often especially in good weather. My tears like teenagers hiding under the hoods of my eyes, so committed they were to never falling for the joke of astonishment. When I was told there were seven wonders of the world, I trusted the math, believed I had seen none of them. Of course, beauty hunted me. It hunts everyone. But I outran it, hid in worry, regret, the promise of an afterlife or a week's end. Then one day, in a red velvet theater in New Orleans, I watched Maya Angelou walk on stage, 17 slow steps to the mic. She took a breath before speaking, and I could hear God being born in that breath. My every pore reached out like a hand, pointing to the first unsinkable lotus in the bayou of the universe. I'd never felt anything like it. Searched the encyclopedia for the feeling's name when I got home. Goosebumps. Afterward, I thought, well, I can do this. Started training morning to night, crowbar swinging like a pendulum at the wall of my chest, tore the caution tape off my life and let everything touch it. Allen Iverson on the television in his first season with the Sixers, crossover sharp as a V of sparrows, flying through the paint like Michelangelo's brush, 333 goosebumps. My baby sister, sober for the first time in 13 years, calling to tell me she just noticed our mother's eyes are green, 505 goosebumps. One day my friends scored tickets to a Prince concert, tiny venue. I was right behind the sound booth, Prince's entire band that evening, women. At the end of the show, the sound person turned around and whispered, he didn't play one song in his set list the whole night. I live on stages. I know what it is to scratch a plan, but not the whole trip and still arrive to your destination 200 years before your time, 421 artists formerly known as Goosebumps. But that's just the fancy stuff. Some of them came from simple facts. It rains diamonds on Jupiter. Blood donors in Sweden receive a thank you message when their blood is used. One night in Michigan, my friend, still undiagnosed, could not uncurl her fingers to strum her guitar, so she sang the chords instead. It was the first time in my life I'd seen pain become an instrument. 10 dozen goosebumps for each and every note plucked from the string section of her refusal to silence her dream. After that, nothing in the world was gray. Even the movie of my past was released in color. The oldest man in my hometown could not get to the door to listen to our carols, so we went inside and sang at his bedside instead. 24 boots on the front step catching snowflakes with their tongues, 776 goosebumps. At one point, everything started doing it. A sincere apology, an enemy's love poem, the moon rising over the continental divide. My girlfriend and I thought it was a car driving off a cliff, and suddenly nothing in the world was dying. You ever felt that? A split second when nothing in the world is dying. And the next 888 goosebumps. And the next day I sharpened a tiny axe so I could split the seconds myself. Too much lives in a moment to not feed it to the fire in the heart slow. A Missoula treehouse filled with candlelight. The octopus documentary. The biggest dog in the shelter hiding behind a teacup chihuahua. And the woman who came to adopt a cat, taking all three of them home, me and my home. 3 months into chemotherapy, watching all of my eyelashes fall onto my cheekbones and realizing that was 400 wishes I wouldn't have made otherwise. There is no escaping the magic now. Beauty caught me and never let me go. And the thing about the world record is, if someone breaks it after me, and they will break it after me, I will love that so much that without even trying, I'll just break it again.
That was Colorado's poet laureate Andrea Gibson sharing one of their poems on KGNU's Outsources. Thanks to Karen Rayforth for that. And you can find the entire conversation with Andrea Gibson at kgnu.org. And we finish today's show with a story about prom. It's a rite of passage for students, but many get left out for lots of different reasons. Schools from Aspen to Glenwood have teamed up with the national organisation Best Buddies to make prom more accessible and fun for all. Aspen Public Radio's Eleanor Bennett went to the first annual Starry Night themed Friendship Ball that took place last month and brings us this report.
The arts campus at Willits is decorated in colourful balloons, the lights are dimmed, and a buffet lines one wall of the room. Greeters are handing out temporary tattoos to students and parents dressed in sparkly outfits, and the excitement is palpable.
This is my first ever prom in my entire life, and I'm so excited because this is when you get to have food, mocktails, pictures, dancing, hang out with your friends, and I'm just super excited.
Aspen middle schooler Kaya Eklund is here with her mom, who she says let her wear makeup for the special occasion.
A little bit of makeup, concealer, eyeshadow, and mascara.
Kaya was born with Down syndrome and started participating in Best Buddies earlier this school year.
I love being in Best Buddies, and it affects my life.
Best Buddies, which started in the late 80s at Georgetown University, is now offered all over the world, and it just launched in local schools from Aspen to Glenwood this fall. The free program matches students with intellectual and developmental disabilities with peers who do not have a disability. Students participate in free weekly activities together, like buddy lunches and arts and crafts.
And it's all about making friends in the world, and it's really, really good to make new friends.
Kaya introduces me to her 8th grade best buddy.
This is Logan Novak.
Will you guys tell me a little bit about being buddies?
When we started the program, Kaya came up to me and she was just like, I want you to be my buddy. And I was like, okay. And then we've been buddies ever since, and it's just been so awesome knowing her.
Even though they didn't get ready together, Logan says they coordinated their outfits ahead of the big night.
She did tell me what she was going to wear, and I had to tell her what I was going to wear.
I told her I was going to wear the pink dress, star earrings, headband and braids, and nail polish, cool shoes, pink sparkling tights.
See, those shoes are so cute. I love them.
Logan asks Kaya if she wants to take pictures before dancing, and they head off to the photo booth that's stocked with glittery hats and giant plastic glasses. Over at the buffet table, 8th grader Ann Perlmutter is serving herself a dinner of mac and cheese and ice cream.
It's better than, like, McDonald's and fast food and the food at home.
Ann is a student director for Best Buddies at Aspen Middle School. She says her own experience with autism inspired her to be a mentor to younger students in the program.
To, like, meet other people with, like, the same kind of thing and other, like, disabilities and, like, get a chance to hang out with them so they feel included also.
As dinner wraps up, local DJ Nakaji starts playing Beyoncé's latest hit. Colorful lights are flashing, the disco ball is spinning, and students, including some in wheelchairs and others wearing sensory headphones, crowd onto the dance floor. Best Buddies advisor Renee Giles is swaying to the music with several other parents as her daughter Talia dances on stage.
Oh my God, my daughter is spunky, vivacious. She loves people. She's kind and empathetic.
And it makes her sad that kids like her daughter with neurodiversity don't always get to go to gatherings like prom.
You know, she's not always invited to all the birthday parties, and she's not always invited to all the events. And it's not because she's not an amazing kid, which she is. But, you know, she's a little different.
And Renee says tonight isn't just for the kids.
You know, you put so much energy and love into your children, and they're fine. You know, they're so resilient, they're fine. It's the parents who I think sometimes need the support.
She says it's refreshing to be in a room full of parents who get it, and wonderful to be watching her daughter Talia dancing on stage. For her part, Talia says she loves requesting songs and dancing with friends.
Was this your first, like, big dance?
Yeah.
What do you think of it? Would you do this again?
Yes. I felt a little special for being here today.
As for Kaya, she's had a pretty good time at prom, too.
This is way fun to be here more than doing chores.
As the evening comes to a close, DJ Nakaji hands Kaya the mic, and she invites everyone to join her for the last dance.
Got to have someone to jam out with me.
Eleanor Bennett, Aspen Public Radio News.
You've been listening to the Regional Roundup, a production of Rocky Mountain Community Radio, a network of public and community radio stations in Colorado, Wyoming, Utah, and New Mexico, including this one. Thanks to KFFR's DJ Abby, KGNU's Karen Rayforth, Laura Jones and Nick Burns of KRCL, and Aspen Public Radio's Eleanor Bennett for today's show. Our theme music is Take Me Somewhere by Joel Adam Russell. I'm Maeve Conran. Thanks for listening.